Today on our show,
we're counting down the top 10 unexplained mysteries of all time.
Let's go. Welcome to episode 418 of the Countdown Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down stuff in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. And today's topic is, potentially an out there one.
No, it's an out there one, and it's a new one for the show. We are doing the top 10 unexplained mysteries
ever.
Ever.
Yeah. So, our favorite unexplained mysteries.
Yeah, now, the ones I've always worried
didn't,
about.
We didn't put any parameters in beyond that. So we didn't say it had to be real world true crime. We didn't say it had to be supernatural. It could be any and all of the things. Above.
Things you wondered about. I always wondered about some shit. That's what was on my list today.
Well, a lot of research went into this list, I have to say, today for me. I read a lot of websites.
Hell yes.
Very concerned about what the Australian Federal Police will think if they looked at my search history over the last week or so. Because no, I'm not planning to murder anyone. And no, the disappearance of X person or Y person is not fodder for anything happening in the future. Just to put it out there straight away. But I actually, this is odd for me, because I am inherently fascinated by the supernatural.
That you are.
So I wonder about everything from life after death to creatures and all that kind of shit. But there's almost none of that on my list.
You know why?
Because I found myself much more drawn to what the fuck happened here?
Yes. And that's what this show is about, ladies and gentlemen. So last time we did conspiracy theories, right?
Yes.
That all itself can be proven, misproven, is out there. It's more fun to talk about. This here, no one actually has the fucking answer.
I've got one on my list that they have a credible explanation
That's
for it.
That's fine.
But it's not confirmed.
Not confirmed. This right? is unexplained still, or yeah. at least
there's
not
a good,
confirmed.
There's a good theory.
Yes.
But everything else on my list, people are still scratching their heads to this day.
Yes.
Which wondering is totally how the fuck this happened. And it's so, some of mine are genuinely creepy. Like,
there's one on mine, which I'll tell you about it when it happens. But I was actually creeped out and I was doing the list alone at home at night.
Well, I had this.
And I was like,
I went out after I did all the research for this list one night, driving along thinking, did I lock the door? I lock the door.
Shit like that. Yeah. That's what happens in this show if you're doing a show like this. It's like,
too far into this shit.
Yeah, your brain starts going.
I don't know how anyone does a true crime podcast after doing this list this week. Mm. If this is how you just dive in week after week and not have it affect your psyche. So, yeah, we're dipping
tough.
Our toe in these dark, dark waters. I don't think we'll stay here for too long. We'll be back to sort of filth and ridiculousness and light and fluffness going forward. But who knows? If this one does well, maybe we'll...
I'll still probably say dick and stuff.
Well...
I mean, I can't tell. I don't know until it happens, but, just saying.
As long as you're not showing it, it's okay.
On a podcast, won't be a problem.
All right, then. Without any further ado, let's get into it. The first thing which kicks off every show, it's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recount?
Who?
Who wants a recount?
The recount's our mail room, and Paul is about to read the mail.
I am, and the most of the mail pertains to last week's show, the top 10 one-season television shows, and it had been an awfully long time, Wayne, since anyone had voted for me.
I actually did scroll past this result, and I got fingered. I got so fingered. There were so many fingers, I felt like a sock puppet.
If I had the Sopranos... I would have put that one on right there. Look, you absolutely did. It was not as many votes this week. I don't know if people, that episode didn't do as well, but still 39 votes. People, the problem with our format now is because we release on a Friday, you have to wait 2 weeks. And so it's not as vivid in people's minds. But look, 39 votes. It was an absolute shellacking. You are correct. 33 for me, six to you.
That's pants down.
So take off around the house,
okay,
Wayne.
We'll be right
and
back.
And we'll have some Benny Hill music. All right, now Wayne is back and he's put his pants on, I do promise. Stephen Croon said, Paul for having both Band of Brothers and Chernobyl, although Watchmen was a really great pick from Wayne. Also,
thanks.
I'm pretty sure The People vs. O.J. Simpson isn't a single season TV show. It was just season one of the show American Crime Story.
Bull titties, really?
I don't know. I don't watch that shit.
I watched it and I didn't notice that, but sorry if that's the case.
Inconceivable.
Says Wayne. Jesse Dixon said, voting for Paul because Wayne had the worst MCU show on his list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Come on. But I know you're not alone in thinking that.
Troy Spinner, the man who puts our list up every week there. Thank you so much for your hard work. Troy said, despite his unnecessary hating on Hawkeye, it's an easy win for Paul this week. And now I've voted for him 3 weeks in a row. Is it time to hand my Wayne voting block membership in?
Which you never had. Sure.
I'll be laughing at that one. Josh Ragland said, I haven't seen most of the shows on either list, but I did love Studio 60 and was extremely bummed when it was cancelled. So Wayne,
true dat,
for a vote on this list.
One of the six.
John Hislander said, while Wayne properly has Police Squad higher on his list than Paul, he doesn't have Banner Brothers, but does have Hawkeye. That, and he mixed up Battlestar Galactica with Buck Rogers talking about Twiggy.
I saw that and I was like, did I say Twiggy?
Someone did done a bad dickhead thing.
Fair enough. I deserve to lose this week.
And he also pointed out that Rick Springfield was in the original Battlestar Galactica. It was meant to be like his launching pad to be superstardom.
Was it?
Yeah.
Rick Springfield?
Yeah, the Aussie singer.
Damn, Jesse's girl.
And last one, Christopher Salat said, only seen three on Wayne's list and five of Paul's list, although I love Watchmen, but Paul by majority of the shows I've seen.
Fair enough.
There we are. So, yay, I won one.
Congratulations, all.
Huzzah and hurrah, and the streak is broken. Let's see what happens next week when we talk about cover songs. With that, I think we'll be a much closer vote. Maybe I'm just deluding myself because people will love your shit.
No, I actually listened to the show and I'm like, no one's going to vote for me. So that's fine.
I don't believe that for a second.
We'll see.
All right, then. Let's get into it then. On the other side of this music cue, the top 10 unexplained mysteries. The top 10 unexplained mysteries of all time.
Okay.
Is this week's topic? Come on. There was a lot of mixing going on.
There was a lot of fucking pausing.
I'm sure you enjoyed it as well. The theatrical nature of all that. But Wayne, in his infinite fucking wisdom, just wants to pull the piss.
Yeah, not like anyone I know.
Well, as punishment, you may lead away while I fucking reset everything over here, Wayne. What is your 10th best unexplained mystery?
Okay, Cuntington Bear. Here we go. Now, my number 10, ladies and gentlemen, it's a bit of a vexing thing in the art world, shall we say.
Well, I would hope it was mysterious, because otherwise you've missed the fucking brief.
Well, you know, before you eat my dick, listen. my number 10 is who or what is Banksy?
Okay.
Does anyone? Here's the thing, people. Of all the mysteries in the art world,
look, it's not a what.
Well, there's actually. Here's the thing. Listen. Okay, there's a hidden identity of Banksy. Now he's actually.
Could be an organization.
Yes, it could be a. Now some people. Basically, what he does is he is a an artist. You know, ostensibly, who some may say is a collection of artists. He was first noticed in the early 1990s, and he creates easily recognizable street art and graffiti. So it's often like pieces with social or political themes or yada, yada, yada. The weird thing about this, ladies and gentlemen, is that his work, his art pieces, which you know, on buildings and they can actually be sold for millions of dollars, but he, she, them, it, never they do. Yeah. Don't get it. So they are creating this piece of art that goes through the, you know, and I don't even understand, not only do I not know who he is, I don't understand how this works. I had to do a lot of Googling on this and actually figure it out. How does he or she make money? And the way that that person makes money is by selling prints of their artwork, and they have a book that has gone out, and there's, you know, all these sorts of, like, there's actually a site called Pictures on Walls where it comes out of. That's where that person makes
money.
Pictures on Walls.
Banksy's website.
Yeah. It's like a portal or something, a print shop, really. And what that means, though, is that someone knows, Paul. Because whoever published the book had to give a check to someone, right? But I don't know. No one has gone out with it.
Okay, so how do you know it's a bank? I am artistically clueless, okay? So when it comes to art on a wall, what looks good and what doesn't just doesn't speak to me.
It doesn't mean anything for it.
I can read a script.
Asking about how is it verified?
Yeah, how do you know it's a Banksy work?
Typically, well, that's the thing, Paul. That's why this is so mysterious and unexplained to me, is that you don't really, because no one steps up and stands next to it.
Because surely there's a lot of artists who are good enough just to go copy the Banksy signature.
Exactly. They even say it could be a group of artists who just do work in his style. It's basically stencil work with spray paint. It's essentially what he's doing. It is good work, but it's good work for the sake of its art. So the problem is, it's like, who or what is he? Like, how do we know it's him? And more importantly, if you're someone who's going to pay millions of dollars for a piece of art and you're not quite sure it's Banksy, what is driving you to do that? Now, there's a bigger story about the art world and how millionaires can control it and so on and so on and so on, which I won't get into, but I have always wondered what one, who's Banksy? Two, who owns his art exactly? Because if you're the person selling it for millions of dollars,
someone registered at a bank account to make money off this on whatever that website is.
Right. But the third thing is, how do we not know who he is yet? There is an audit trail because he gets paid.
Yeah.
There isn't a website thing, so he gets. So why don't we know?
Does it go through like shell companies?
Must do. Right. Because, and so that's like, to me, it's just the weirdest thing ever. Because let me tell you, as an artist, you really want people to know the work that you did.
It is fascinating. I agree. That's a really good one. Really good one for number 10. My number 10 is as far away from that as humanly possible, please, both in time and in terms of crime, if you want to call it that. Because I guess Banksy's artwork is graffiti, right?
Essentially.
Yeah. This is about murders.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we got that.
But it's one of the most famous murders of all time, or at least serial killers of all time, Jack the Ripper, number 10.
Ah.
That's why I stuck it down here, because everyone knows about it. So in 1888, in the East End of London, five women of the night, five prostitutes, were murdered very awfully by someone who claimed to be the murderer, and who became known as Jack the Ripper. And he wrote to Scotland Yard, basically saying and mocking
taunting them
with his crimes. And we've seen that in 7,000 films and From Hell from the Hughes brothers and the graphic novel that was based on and written, I think, by Alan Moore, was that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah?
It fucking sucks.
Okay, I haven't read it. I don't know. But there's theories that this man murdered at least six other women as well, and they've never been formally linked get together. And over a very short period of time, like...
Victorian England?
Yeah, 1888. Yeah. So August 7th to September 10th, that's very small window of time that these murders took place. Normally, serial killers tend to murder, move on, move away, or if they stay in the same area, they let time go by because the heat dies down a bit. Mm-hmm. So I get it. This is 1888. It's not the same as almost 150 years later. Yeah, that police work and the has massively improved, but still, like, it's a very odd, it doesn't fit the pattern of the way this works.
Here's what
serial killers differ from mass murderers. Mass murderers is murder a whole bunch of people in the one go and get taken out or surrender.
What I know of this film is or a TV miniseries that starred Michael Caine back in the day. And they had purported that, okay, we're going to do a three-part series on Jack the Ripper. Michael Caine's going to play Detective Abilene, who apparently was the guy who actually was the inspector in charge at the time. And they were going to flesh out all of the, you know, who the suspects were. And they finally were going to reveal it at the very end, who it was, and even the actors weren't told, all that sort of thing, okay? Turns out, according to this thing, and they say they've researched it and they believe this to be...
The prince?
Hey?
There was a theory at one time.
It wasn't the prince, but it was the doctor of the royal family.
Right.
Because the idea was all of the carving up of the prostitutes or whatever was done with
surgical precision,
and, you know, only a doctor could do it, yada, yada. So that's how they actually reckon that they caught him. And said, oh, here we go. We've got him. We're going to tell everyone. And then the inspector said, you cannot embarrass the royal family by saying that their physician is the one who is the killer. We're going to call it unsolved. And Inspector Aveline chucked a shit.
So they killed him.
They didn't kill him.
Quietly. They let him just go on.
He was about to kill him.
Then why did they stop murdering? Why did he stop murdering? Because
he was caught.
But so if you do this again, then we'll do something?
I think they put him away, but okay, they didn't publicize that he was caught. Yeah, so they actually faked that it was unsolved.
That's a theory.
Okay. But that's a theory, so there you go.
All right, there you go. That's my number 10, Jack the Ripper.
Okay, so, ladies and gentlemen.
Sorry. Jack the Ripper.
Completely worthwhile. So, now, three nights ago, in fact, ladies and gentlemen, I was sitting here in this very room in my little house at about midnight doing this list and researching shit that creeped me out. This one, for some reason, is a real story that happened, and it creeped me out. It's not as dire as any of the murders or this and that, but it freaked me out.
I've got some things that aren't dire on my list. They're just disturbing.
All right, well, check this out. This is called The Watcher House.
Yeah, it's on my list.
Fuck!
Yeah, much higher.
Really?
Much higher, because of the exact reason, because this, for me, this thing is...
creepier.
Yeah.
...than an actual murder. Okay, well, let's just
go ahead.
Let's go back and forth. Okay, everyone. In June 2014, a couple, or family, Maria and Derek Broaddus, and their three young children were getting ready to move into their new house at 657 Boulevard in Westfield, New Jersey. Some of our listeners are in New Jersey. Maybe you know this place or this story.
Look, New Jersey's a big place, but yeah, okay.
Okay, so like Bree, she's in New Jersey. So they claimed the six-bedroom house was their dream home, yada, yada, yada. And then 3 days after closing the sale, before the family had even begun to move in, they got this letter in their mailbox, and the letter was addressed to the new owner, big clunky handwriting.
Allow me to read this.
Please.
With the appropriate filter.
Please. Oh, God.
Dearest new neighbor at 657 Boulevard, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood. How did you end up here? Did 657 Boulevard call you? Call to you with its force within. 657 Boulevard has been the subject of my family for decades now, and as it approaches its 110th birthday, I've been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father watched in the 1960s. It is now my time. Who am I? There are hundreds and hundreds of cars that drive by 657 Boulevard each day. Maybe I am in one. Look at all the windows you can see from 657 Boulevard. Maybe I am in one. Look at any of the many windows of 657 Boulevard, all the people who stroll by each day. Maybe I am one.
That was actually surprisingly effective. So well done.
It was, I fucked it up three times during
the Yeah, look, nobody's perfect. The letter also mentions specifics about the family. You have children. I have seen them. So far, I think there are three that I have counted. Do you need to fill the house with young blood? I requested.
Do you need to fill the house with the young blood? I requested. Better for me. Was your old house too small for the growing family? I was agreed to bring me your children. Once I know their names, I will call them and draw them to me.
At the bottom of the letter, the author used cursive font to sign The Watcher. Now, first of all, that's actually pretty good, Paul. Well, that's all that stuff, and that's actually helping this story.
For once!
Yes, it is. Well done. So, you know, the family, they reached out to the previous family who sold them the house. They stated that during the 23 years of living there, they had never received a letter like that. So this is new. They also
never felt watched.
They never felt it.
And they thought it was odd, but they threw it away.
Right.
Too much concern.
Exactly. So go on. The police...
Although they sent it to the police just to be sure an investigation was opened.
Right. Now, here's what the thing is, right? So the police, they warned them not to tell anyone about the letters. 2 weeks later, even though the Broaddus family still hadn't moved in, they received a second letter with even more chilling specifics about the family. And Paul, take it away.
Here we go. Will the children sleep in the attic, or will you all sleep on the second floor? Who has the bedrooms facing the street? I will know as soon as you move in. It will help me to know who is in which bedroom. Then I can plan better.
Get out of my house, you murderous cunt! Sorry, I couldn't do it. Oh my god, alright, that was scary. So several weeks later, the Broaddus family had put their plans on hold to move in. Third letter arrives saying...
Where have you gone to? 657 is missing you.
There you go. By the end of 2014, the case had stalled. There was no digital trail. No fucking... All the mental effects were taking a toll on the family. And by the way, if this happened to me, I would shit my Calvins directly, and then again, and then leave. Okay?
So it's really interesting to me. First of all, this was the subject of a Netflix special, which I think Ryan Murphy was responsible for.
Who did
American Horror Story and Glee. Brad Fulcher, which one of those guys was responsible for this. And it had Bobby Cannavale, and I can't remember who else was in it.
Yeah, he's a good guy to put in there.
And the show just ends because there is no ending to the story. That's the creepy
part. Unsolved.
Whoever wrote these fucking notes is still out there. Wrote these letters. And you know what? Just think about now. Who would do this? What's the point?
Some piece of shit?
Who just wants to mess with people? But how did he know? As you said, there were specifics about the family. So he
definitely watched.
We shouldn't say he. They.
It.
They did a deep dive on this family to find out all the details about them that they could.
And exactly.
And then scare them out of moving in. The person I would look at most wholeheartedly is who moved in next.
Well, it says here that 657 has been sold, right? There were no fingerprints or anything to the scene, whatever. Nothing happened. And it's currently off the market as at what this reading is, while the watcher's identity still remains a mystery. So this is...
Fascinating. Fascinating.
And I tell you what, I sat here going, because the whole house was dark and I'm just hearing my little hovel.
I'm surprised so low on your list. Because this creeped me out too, which is why it's so high.
It's because it's not something I've always wondered about, but coming across it, I'm like,
yep.
You know? And they're like, I don't even have a family. So forget about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Damn.
What a story. And okay, so on both our lists. There we are. Much higher on mine. We'll find out higher later. My number 9 is the one that probably has the best solution of any of these on my list. I refer to it as the severed feet mystery. So in British Columbia in 2007, a girl was walking on the beach and she found a sneaker that washed up on shore.
Mm.
Inside, there was a human foot. Now that alone, we've had our own version of that just in a couple of recent years. Melissa Craddock, noted con woman, a foot of hers turned up in a shoe after she disappeared, having conned people out of millions and millions of dollars. But then since that time in 2007, a number of severed feet have washed ashore. belonging to 5 men, 1 woman, and 3 of them of unknown sex. 9 severed feet have washed ashore in the same area in British Columbia.
What is this?
That is freaky as fuck. Now, there are a number of fleets.
Well, yeah, what are we thinking here? Is floating it, around. Is it some mafia shit?
Well, in the end, it turned out 1 foot was matched to DNA of a man who was described as suicidal before clearly he died. The authorities were able to match 2 other found feet to a woman who was also believed to have committed suicide. So the theory is they've all jumped off a particular bridge somewhere not that far away, and the tides have washed feet. But why do the feet get knocked off? Like, when you jump into water from however high you are, it's not like it cuts your feet off.
No, that's why I say, is it some mob shit? Because sometimes they cut your foot off to just...
And no other body parts have arrived. It's not like 2 feet from the same person arrived. So it's very odd. And all the shoemakings are previous to 2004, apparently. So there's talk around, well, maybe it was a tsunami thing.
But why the feet?
Yeah.
See, so that's what I think. Because like, if you're a gangster...
If the solution is it's suicide, but why just feet? Why not bodies rolling up there?
I'm thinking maybe it's cement shoes and they throw someone down and somehow the body breaks off. Cement fucking breaks and then it's just feet. I don't know.
I like the thinking. You like the outside of the box. Very straightforward, but that one really does... Sort of,
it's just as weird that it's my feet. Imagination. Yeah, because it's weird. It's feet.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, if it was a head,
Quentin Tarantino should be looked at very closely.
Yeah, no shit. Okay, enough of that. All right, my number 8 is actually just something that I always wondered about. It's the Philadelphia Experiment. Everyone, okay.
Yeah, that's nice.
And I'll be honest with you, I thought about it because of the movie.
Fair enough.
But like, according to legend, on October 28, 1943, the USS Eldridge, which is a cannon-class big-ass destroyer warship action, was conducting top-secret experiments designed to win command of the oceans against the Axis powers. So this is during the World War, of course, Second World War. The rumor was that the government was creating tech that would render naval ships invisible to enemy radar, and it was basically they were trying to test it out. So witnesses claim that an eerie green-blue glow surrounded the hull of this destroyer ship as her generators spun up, and then suddenly the Eldridge disappeared. Okay? The ship was then seen in Norfolk Naval Shipping Yard in Virginia before disappearing again and reappearing back.
Incredibly, Michael Paré's career also disappeared at the same time.
I know, and that guy should have really taken on board. Like, I remember that shit. And the idea here is that obviously it was, it disappeared and reappeared, and that could do that. Now, the legend states that the military documents reported that the Eldridge crew were affected by the events in disturbing ways. Some went insane. In Michael Paré's case, he discovered light Coca-Cola cans from the beach shore, as I recall. Others developed mysterious illnesses, but others were said to have been fused together with the ship still alive, but with limbs sealed to the metal, which is some fairly event horizon shit. I think you'll find. One of the weirdest details is that the annotations in this Navy officer's Office of Naval Research was designed to look like they were written by 3 different authors. One was extraterrestrial. It's a lot of
it's the details, right?
It's the details that make it weird. So the speculation as to what really happened aboard the ship is that there was one guy named Edward Dudgeon who served in the U.S. Aboard that the USS Engstrom, which is not that ship, it's another ship, that was dry docked in Philadelphia while the Eldridge was both ships had classified devices on board, and he said there were no invisibility cloaks or teleportation drives designed by aliens, which was the current theory at the time.
Okay, yeah, sure.
But instead, they scrambled magnetic signatures of ships after using degaussing techniques, which is like protection from magnetic torpedoes aboard U-boats. He said that's all that happened. And How Stuff Works podcast suggested that the green glow that people said that they saw was Chernobyl's fire. Like, it's electrical storm.
Okay. I mean, the fact that 80 years later we've had fuck all...
Yeah, what's weird about it is that you don't hear shit. Like, it's... Yeah, there's been...
If there was tech that was really discovered, then surely it would now be commonplace and people would know all about it. Absolutely. So.
And yeah, I've heard CIA agents like that get interviewed talk about it. They say, look, I'll tell you something. If something ever happened, eventually you'll know about it, and I'll tell you why people don't keep their fucking mouth shut.
No, exactly.
He said...
This is... the major reason why conspiracies don't work, because eventually someone sees a way that they can profit from telling a story and will tell that fucking story.
And the only reason it doesn't work out in terms of like no one knows the real thing is that too many people talk about it and then it becomes like a thing. Like the JFK assassination. There's a million theories. Okay. You know?
All right.
There you go.
Nice one. My number 8 is another murder. It's one that's very famously been depicted in James Ellroy's first of the LA Quartet novels, The Black Dahlia Murder.
No. Now tell me about the Black Dahlia murder.
The devil, likewise, is in the details here. So 22-year-old Elizabeth Short, a.k.a. the Black Dahlia, was found murdered on a block of 3800S, I guess South Norton Avenue in Los Angeles, on January 15th, 1947. She was cut in half and so pale and drained of blood that the woman who found the body initially mistook it to be a mannequin. It was cut with surgical precision, so here's Jack the Ripper all over again, leaving no trauma to internal organs or bones. Her face was also cut from mouth to ear, leaving her with that eerie, permanent, long smile.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was no blood on the ground, which made them believe this all took place somewhere else somewhere and they moved the body there. 9 days after she was discovered, an envelope was sent to the examiner addressed by using individual cut and pasted letters. So that old school kind of fucking
ransom note.
Noir kind of shit. It read, "The Los Angeles Examiner and other Los Angeles papers, here is Dahlia's belongings, letter to follow." As promised, the envelope contained Short's social security card, birth certificate, photographs, names written on a piece of paper, and an address book with pages missing and the name Mark Hansen embossed on the cover. Gasoline had been used to clean the objects, removing it off fingertips. And on March 14th, a suicide note scrawled in pencil on a bit of paper was found tucked in the shoe, in a pile of men's clothing by the ocean's edge at the foot of Breeze Avenue in Venice. The note read, "To whom it may concern, I have waited for the police to capture you for the Black Dahlia killing, but have not. I am too much of a coward to turn myself in, so this is the best way for me. I couldn't help myself for that or this. Sorry, Mary."
Mary. So the purporting here is that Mary, who is the Black Dahlia killer, killed herself in the ocean and left a suicide note in a shoe, which is a dude's shoe.
The owner's clue gave no clue about the identity of the owner. So no one ever found if that person really did commit suicide or was it just a clever ruse to kind of take the heat off them after they did this heinous crime. No one will ever know.
Now,
so yeah, first book in the LA Quartet written by James Ulrich, and then De Palma, as he was De Palmering, made a film about this with Josh Hartnett. Yeah, it was terrible. We saw it. I'm sure we saw it together.
I only heard that it was shit. I don't think I've seen it.
Were you there? It's so bad, apart from one awesome overhead shot.
Yeah.
Early in the film.
So James Ellroy, I have this odd, because I love LA Confidential, and then I went and read the novel. Confidential. And I read the novel, and I'm like, I hate the way this guy writes.
He writes very staccato.
Yeah, fucking this, fucking three.
I got into it at the end, I read them all, I really enjoyed them, but you have to almost reprogram your brain to accept that
which way I shouldn't writing. Have to do.
Apparently he's working on a second quartet now.
Is he? Mm. Look, I hope they make good movies from it. But the James Ellroy's mother was murdered, and that's what got him into writing about crime and real crime. So that's Black Dahlia.
That is
so
the story.
That's what it was all about. That is freaky.
That's my number 8.
All right,
Black Dahlia murder.
My number 7 is it's about D.B. Cooper.
Yes,
everyone know about D.B. Cooper. According to Loki, it was actually Loki that was D.B. Cooper. But in Wednesday, November 24th, 1971, a man identified as Daniel Cooper bought a $20 one-way ticket on Northwest Airlines, flight 305 from Portland, and he was described as a mid-40s guy, wears a business suit, overcoat, brown shoes, white shirt, black tie, and he carried a briefcase. When he's in the flight, he orders a bourbon and soda from a flight attendant.
God, you could order drinks before a flight took off in those days?
I know, right? Not like now. After the plane's airborne, he hands the flight attendant a note. She puts it in her pocket without looking because she assumes he's just giving her a fucking phone number, and she's like, fuck you. He says, "Miss, you better look at that note. I have a bomb." Cooper then told her the bomb was in his briefcase and asked her to
what?
Sit. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he said he asked her to sit next to him, and he opens the briefcase to reveal red-colored sticks surrounded by an array of wires, so the old dynamite bomb. He then tells her, okay, write down everything I'm about to say, then take it to the captain. This note says, "I want $200K by 5 p.m. in a cash, exclusively in $20 bills, put in a knapsack. I want 2 back parachutes and 2 front parachutes. When we land, I want a fuel truck ready to refuel. No funny stuff or I'll do the job." Basically, I'll blow it up.
Right. Okay.
FBI agents assemble the money. They get it from several banks and police obtain the parachutes from a skydiving pool. They exit the crew. The plane lands. He lets all the crew off, basically. Right?
The passengers,
yeah. And there's some remaining crew. He said, okay, refuel, chart a course for Mexico City, stay below 10,000 feet. They fly off, and during the flight, Cooper put on a pair of dark wraparound sunglasses, which would make it into the official sketch, and then jumped out. He basically...
So opened the door.
Opened the door in the air.
10,000 feet, it doesn't suck all the atmosphere out.
I think so. That was his plan, right? So he took all the money and jumped out with 2 of the parachutes and the money and was never seen again. Now, There was an expansive manhunt over 45 years of searching. No conclusions have ever been made
okay.
as to who he is, or his fate, or his jump. It's called one of the greatest cold cases in the US FBI history. Apparently, some people maintain that the money was never spent. So, but that would mean that they would have to have taken all of that money from four different banks and marked it all.
Yeah.
How do they know? Exactly. So
he goes to a newsagent, buys a fucking newspaper about his crime a week later or whatever. How does everyone know that gets spent? It's not like it's a credit card fucking trail.
Exactly. Well, back in the 70s, when you say marked bills, it is literally a marked bill. They take a red pen and they put a dot in the bottom left-hand corner. Not like now where they look at the...
But even then, what are they doing? Like, it's a big fucking world out there, it's a big country.
Yeah.
How do you check every dollar, every $20 bill that gets fucking transactioned? You can't.
Well, apparently what they do is, and this is what I've heard, right? Because I say the same thing. I'm like, how do you do that? Like, because when it's a serial number, then serial numbers turn up once they come back to the Federal Reserve, they can track the bill. Because they actually do it that way,
so
apparently.
So they come back to the Federal Reserve, but they get what?
Destroyed. I think there's some system with the bank. Actually, someone out there
probably knows this. It's too late.
No, but then you can check where he's been and try and get a cent on him.
Okay.
With these ones, it's like if it's a marked bill, first of all, he has to spend the marked bill and hope that he didn't notice the fucking red dot on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time, I don't know, someone has to notice them and actually report it.
Someone wrote down, what's 200,000 divided by 20?
Well, that's what I say. Unless they had a team of agents doing this and marking every single bill or every...
Exactly.
Bill, you know, it's just unlikely. Anyway, so yeah.
The particulars of that confused me, but wow, what a crime.
I know. It's like jumping out of a plane and...
I heard the name, but I'd never done the research.
Yeah, that's why when Loki happened, it's like, oh my God, you were DP Cooper? It's like, yeah, okay, fine.
All right, my number seven, again, very different, is The Lost Colony of Roanoke, which is...
Go on.
A widely known... Oh, it's not even urban legend. It's the truth. In 1587, so a long time ago, an English colonial governor, John White, led a group of people from Britain to find an English colony settling on Roanoke Island, as one of a chain of barrier islands known as the Outer Banks near North Carolina.
Okay.
Rations were running low, so White left with a whole bunch of people. And before he left, he said, look, if anything goes wrong, carve a cross in a nearby tree and I'll find that out. Anyway, so he comes back. It was like 3 years later he comes back. What? How long does it take to find fucking...
It was the 1500s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it probably takes you fucking 30 fucking years to get to a fucking new island.
So there was no cross on the tree, but there was the word Croatoan scratched into it, which was the name of a Native American tribe, First Nations tribe, that allied with the English colonists and was carved into a post. And White took this to mean that they moved to Croatoan Island. But ever since they never found those people, all those people there, disappeared off the face of the earth. I don't actually know. I don't think they know how many people.
But if it's a colony, it's a fair amount of people.
Yeah, it can't have been like 5 or 10. Must have been more like 50, 100, 150 people. And ongoing investigations claim that the colonists had been slaughtered by a Powhatan tribe, but there is no evidence to support this, archaeological or otherwise. And a recent re-examination indicates that any massacre that occurred was not of this group, but rather an earlier group. So we just don't know.
That's always weird, that shit, when it's like some cryptic clue and then they just disappear without a trace. I mean, in 3 years, everything could wash away, but there's no evidence.
But apparently the colony was abandoned with all the houses and military constructions dismantled with care.
Oh, so they maybe planned to leave.
There was no sign of a struggle, no sign of battle or whatever, which you would expect if
they were uprooting.
If there was some kind of
there'd be
group
damage.
Came in, there'd have been fire.
Or even if it had been... undismantled, as in they left in a hurry, that would be, they got chased off or something. But
none of that. So it's very interesting. And that's been the subject of countless films, and Supernatural did a whole episode on it too, and American Horror Story did a whole season on it. So this thing comes up time and again.
So they still just don't know.
No,
they just disappeared.
Just don't know. Unsolved, unexplained mystery.
Nuts. Okay, well, my number six, ladies and gentlemen, is one that I discussed often with an ex-girlfriend of mine who was very enamored with these types of stories. It's the mysterious drowning of an actress named Natalie Wood.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Now,
I talked about this at work yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay, so check this out, everyone. It's about fucking Christopher Walken
and
Robert Redford, okay? So here's what happened. By the way, Robert Redford was married to Natalie Wood. On November 29, 1981, not that long ago if you're us, around 7:30 a.m., Natalie Wood's body was found floating face down in the Pacific Ocean about 200 yards away from the Blue Cavern Point, which is the Catalina Islands place. She's wearing only a flannel nightgown, blue wool socks, and a red down jacket. She was one of the biggest stars in Hollywood up to that time, and she's in West Side Story, all this sort of shit. And her mother had given the fear of dark water to her daughter because of a fortune teller had prophesied that she would die of drowning.
Really?
Yeah, that apparently is a thing. Okay,
that part of the story I was not aware of.
Yeah, well, I mean, basically, Wood had been working on the film Brainstorm at the time with actor Christopher Walken. And was invited to join her and her husband, Christopher Walken was invited to join her and her husband, Robert Wagner, on their
yacht.
Wasn't
there rumors of an affair?
Yes.
So it all starts to get very mysterious.
This is why it's weird, okay? So they're on the yacht named the Splendor. According to the captain of the yacht and the family friend, his name is Dennis Davern, Wood had become infatuated with Walken during the filming, and Wagner had flown to the movie set to, quote, make sure he wasn't making a fool of himself over this.
I understand.
Walken, yo, up his ass. So,
up his ass. Understand, you get obsessed with me.
That's it.
That's fucking terrible. Move on.
It is. So, this group left the boat around 12 in the afternoon in November 27. Everyone on the boat, including the captain, had been drinking because it was fucking the early 80s. Early 80s, which means cocaine as well. And so they'd been drinking.
Out of my brain.
On the Friday night, Wood and Wagner had argued to the point where Davern became concerned and then he asked Walken to get involved. And
Walken said, nah.
Walken said, no. Right? He refused to intervene and is quoted as saying, he said, never get involved with an argument between a man and his wife.
Never get involved.
That's not helping.
Argument. Man, what?
Do it once he kills her. Davern ends up taking, he ends up taking Natalie Wood to shore using the ship's dinghy. And they slept at a hotel in Avalon. Next morning, they return to the yacht. Wood agrees to spend the next weekend on board. And that afternoon, they're drinking again. They had so much to drink. The waitress reported Wood not eating much of her dinner and stumbling out of the restaurant when they were done. Walken and Wood boarded the dinghy, went back to the yacht around 10 p.m. A witness from the harbor said that they heard Wood scream about something, but they brushed it off because they said that bitch is drunk.
No, that was a party next door.
Witnesses from a nearby boat claimed they heard shouts around midnight.
Yeah, party.
And there was a party going about it. They said, nah, it's nothing. Don't worry about it. Off, yeah. Long story short, someone heard the words screaming, a woman screaming, help me, someone help me, coming from the stern of the Splendor and potentially from the dinghy that was nearby. And then they heard someone say, okay, honey, we'll get you, but then nothing else. And long story short, then she just disappeared. She disappeared off that boat and was found later dead in the water.
She was gone.
Now.
I think I'm getting better.
Okay. Wagner says he didn't realize she was missing until he went to go kiss her goodnight around 1:30 a.m.
Likely story.
Likely story. And the Coast Guard was alerted. And basically, to this day, no one knows how she died, fell off the boat, whatever this, that. But what makes it weird is that there's these two Hollywood motherfuckers. She's trying to fuck one of them who's not her husband. He comes by off a set to make sure she ain't fucking around. They have a fight. Someone help me. Splish, splash. I'm taking a bath. Now she's nowhere. Out. That's it. So someone, I reckon Bob fucked her up. I reckon Bob pushed her off or fucking, you know, maybe she's drowning. Maybe she's too drunk. He just kind of slides.
We're just in suppositioning mode here, but why not? Why not have fun with it? Who's more likely to murder someone who's sleeping with someone else?
Yeah, not Christopher Walken, because he's the one getting, like, you know, fucking wood. Whoa. Literally wood.
Whoa.
Yes. So it's got to be, and yeah, also I'm saying this.
Comfortable hunk of me.
Here's the thing.
Ass.
In the 80s, early 80s people, I think celebrities were more revered than they are now, where you've got TMZ.
What about going back to a la Babylon days?
They'll let you get away with any old shit. I reckon it's like, hey, this guy's really famous. Why don't we just let you skate on this, Mr. Wagner? I don't know, man. I don't know. It just seems a bit weird.
Well, I do have a TV show with Stephanie Powers lined
up. That's right. Heart to Heart, baby. I used to watch that as a kid.
Yeah, so did I, sadly. All right, yeah, that is a fascinating one. Nice choice there for your number six.
There
my number
go.
Six is also supernatural-ish. No, we don't know. We don't know. The Mary Celeste.
Do you know the Mary Celeste?
The Mary Celeste is a ship in 1872. A British-American ship called the Mary Celeste was found abandoned and floating in the Atlantic Ocean.
I thought it was an actress that... or female.
That was involved with Christopher Walken and Robert Wagner.
Please go on.
It was perfectly seaworthy. Its cargo was fully intact, which is really important because it means pirates were not responsible for this. Except for the lifeboat, which it appeared had been boarded in an orderly fashion. But why? No one who was on that ship was ever seen again. And it set sail with the captain, 7 crew members, including Briggs's wife and their 2-year-old daughter. Supplies were there for 6 months, and there were luxurious items on board, including a sewing machine and upright piano. Everyone agrees that to abandon such a worthy ship, some extraordinary and very alarming set of circumstances must have come about. But the last entry on the ship's log reveals nothing of interest. No storm coming, nothing along those lines. So, could it have been a mutiny? Could it have been a pirate attack? But again, why didn't they take the expensive shit?
Yeah.
People even proposed that they were attacked by some kind of giant octopus or sea monster, but everything was intact on the ship.
So they just
Where did these people go? Who took them? How did they dread? Did they just all walk off the side of the boat? Because that's the likely explanation. They all committed mass suicide. But that's why.
Yeah, why?
There's no explanation.
And it was a whole crew, right?
Yep.
You can't convince everyone.
No.
Unless there was some fucking evil-ass fog that fucks with your brain and seafaring shit.
Let's even assume that one person mutinies, if you want to call it that, and murders everyone else on the ship and dumps their bodies overboard. And then that person does what? Where do they go? They don't take anything of value.
I mean, they don't... I don't think you can man a ship by yourself anyway.
No.
That amount of,
no, so. It was why it was found drifting all by itself. It is, to me, an absolutely perfect mystery.
And where'd he go?
And this is why it's on my list at number 6, the Mary Celeste.
Mary Celeste, interesting one. Okay, cool. Now, my first five have been largely, you know, fun. Not fun. Sorry, it's not fun. But it's like sort of like circumstantial.
Natalie Wood's family.
These five are stuff that I always like wondered about. They're very big mysteries, okay? And my number 5 is this Lost City of Atlantis.
The Lost City of Atlantis, you say?
I do. Now, everyone...
Is that even a real thing?
This is what I found out. Because everyone thinks... You know what? You think about Aquaman, right? You're thinking Atlantis is this sunken city at the bottom of the ocean and there's motherfuckers swimming around like Jason Momoa, right?
I don't think that, but okay, sure.
Okay. Now, I've actually always wondered about this. There's some shit that's happened lately, people, that have actually kind of... First of all, Plato... As in Plato, Aristotle, Socrates.
Morons.
He first told us the tale of Atlantis, and he suggested that Atlantis existed 11,600 years ago.
Very specific.
Was very rich in gold and wealth and became a hugely prosperous place and became so wealthy that the heavens struck it and into the sea and submerged it.
And everyone else is like,
suck my dick.
Yes. Everyone does say that. They actually say, hey, Plato, this is one of your stupid ass ideas. This is some bullshit stories you tell. He actually has gone on in other works to say, no, this is an actual story that I'm telling you, this is the truth.
And then everyone went,
and since then, a guy... Okay, sorry, I'll give you some love. Fuck off.
I'm worried we're just becoming a bit too fucking factual here. All right. Sorry, not factual, ridiculous.
Ridiculous. But in the case of this, there's a guy named Jimmy Corsetti who actually has been doing... He's done a special on Netflix and this and stuff. And
Corsetti, you fuck.
Corsetti. Who's that from?
Skagnetti.
Skagnetti from fucking The Untouchables. Yeah, that's different. Okay, so all right. So this guy, he actually says that there's a location in the Western Sahara in Mauritania called the Richard Structure, and it's also
Skagnetti
called...
Skagnetti was actually Quentin Tarantino, but anyway.
Is it? Okay, I'll take your word for it. It's called the Eye of the Sahara, and most people haven't seen it. Google an overhead shot of it. Long story short, it has really striking similarities to what Plato described as the Lost City of Atlantis. This guy reckons that is the place, and it's got like all these geographical features, like it's made of concentric circles, exactly what this looks like, has an opening to the sea to the south. This place would have that as well. What everyone forgets is that the world was a very different place, you know, 10, 20,000 years ago. Where there was desert, there used to be sea and things like that. And
20,000 years ago, really?
11,600.
I don't believe that.
Look, this guy is actually showing you that you can actually see lava things that stop at a thing like there was rivers there at the time.
If you said 100 million years ago, yeah, sure.
Well, there's salt
11,000 years ago.
I don't know, motherfucker. The point is, there's salt deposits there, which suggests that you actually have like there was ocean water there at the time. And if you look at it all there, it kind of looks.
I think your timelines are out. The sea moves is incremental.
The point is...
Especially back then.
The point is, this place looks like that. And I think that the people have actually gotten the story wrong by thinking that it's at the bottom of the ocean. Apparently, it might have been flooded rather than that, and they got it wrong. So this city actually existed. And apparently, the city was made of gold. This particular area is hugely rich in gold, Mauritania. Yeah. So that's the Lost City of Atlantis may be real. Check out Jimmy Corsetti, and he's got a whole special on it.
Very,
very convincing.
Deep cut reference there.
That no one got.
Children of the Sun?
Nope. None. No idea what you're talking about. No idea what you're talking about.
The cities of gold.
Don't keep, stop starting. Stop going. No one, it's over.
Children of
No one, it's over.
If you know the TV show I'm talking about, then...
No one
then,
does. Keep yeah, going. What's your number four?
That one, I don't know. It just doesn't...
Yeah, I mean... But
I am
thing.
Now drunk? I think I am.
If you've got, yeah, you are. You've got like this whole thing where the idea that it's a thing is, and that it's actually kind of, you know, it might be real.
Pseudoscience. Maybe there was a different explanation for something that we've assumed something else.
At this stage, everything's a theory. So,
Course. That's unexplained. Otherwise, it wouldn't be on this list.
There you go.
Number five is disturbing AF.
Go on.
I think the term is called frogging. I think. That's not disturbing.
It's not sexual, is it?
No.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. It's where people move into your house without you noticing.
Huh? How?
Uh-huh. I know. Now I need to look it up.
Now I'm looking around my house.
Look into your ceiling, my friend, because that's where people do this shit.
You know, there's a rat up there and I hear a lot of fucking noises.
It's called frogging, but P-H-R-O-G-G-I-N-G, not okay. Frogging.
Okay. And how does this work?
Secretly living in someone else's house. Now, the earliest example of this goes back to Germany, picture it, 1922.
Okay.
And it's called the Hinterkaifeck murders.
All right.
So there was this Bavarian farmstead about 70 kilometers north of Munich where six victims were murdered. And I could go through the details, but basically the mom, the dad, when I say mom, dad, the grandparents, their daughter, the daughter's two children,
everyone.
And the maid.
Yep.
Right, they're all murdered. Basically, strange things began to occur around this property shortly before the attack. In the six months prior, the family maid quit because she kept hearing strange sounds in the attic and she believed the house to be haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And then not long before, they hired a new maid to replace her. And that new maid sister dropped her off on the day this all took place. They found papers like that they hadn't ordered on the front lawn. Like, you know, there's a newspaper delivery service.
Who would order a paper if you're hiding? Yep. Yeah, okay.
And just days before the murders, the grandfather told neighbors he discovered tracks in the freshener that led from the forest to a broken door lock in the farm's machine room and not going back the other way.
So is this a practice? This is a thing that happened or is this one particular instance of it?
I just don't know. So
people,
the young girl, the 7-year-old, a friend of hers reported that her mother fled the farm the night before the act after a violent quarrel and only hours later had been found in the forest. So there's a lot of strange shit going on. And anyway, the new maid arrives on the same afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then later that night, one by one, the family was somehow lured out into a barn.
Mm-hmm.
And were murdered. 1, 2, 3, 4 with a mattock. Which is kind of like, imagine a pickaxe with a round thing at the other end.
Okay.
Smashed in the head with that. And then whoever did it went inside and murdered the child and the maid.
Jesus.
They have never found who did this.
When did this happen?
1922. And they're never going to. This plane is gone. Whoever did it is dead, obviously. Long
Are you purporting dead. That the person, whoever did it, was living
was
in the roof?
Squatting in the roof.
And then killed everyone.
For months before planning their move to kill this family. That is... disturbing AF, I think you'll agree.
Yeah, I don't like the idea, and I'm going to check my roof after this. So there you are.
So that bug, whatever, it's like rat that you feel here is just poke your head up and shine the torch around.
Yeah, okay, fine. Okay, damn. Cool. Okay. My number four is very broad, everyone. It's basically aliens, because we all heard about aliens, right?
We're not done to vote this week. I never plan to. Aliens, just everything that's ever happened with aliens ever?
No, this one particular thing.
Fire in the sky?
No.
Okay.
One, well, actually, two little things. One, the world's highest ranking alien believer. There's a Canadian...
How do you get to be the highest ranking alien believer?
Because he's actually a member of Canadian Parliament and he presented to US Congress on his thing. His name is Paul Hellier. And he straight up said... that there are extraterrestrials living among us, but they won't share their advanced technology with us. Yes, because of our warring and polluting ways. Long story short, apparently every time we set off an A-bomb, that affects the universe, and these aliens actually go, the kids are playing with matches. They came down to look at us, and they're like, these fuckers are insane. We're never going to let them have our technology.
Well, if we're that insane and we could destroy everything, why not just squish us into oblivion?
Because maybe they're nicer than us. I don't know. The point being that...
not at risk to their own society if it really affects the universe.
There's plenty of people who risk our society and I don't kill them. but the point is he actually has talked to a lot of generals and stuff who actually all say categorically they do exist. This is how they do things. They communicate via mental telepathy.
This is how they do it.
They have, you know, video of him presenting like his public belief at Congress and all these sorts of things. And he says they do live among us. And he says that, I'm telling you now, Congress, this is it, and you need to look more into it. Now, they say that the U.S. government is actually still covering it up, while not as much anymore. But here's the big kicker, right?
Yeah, okay.
There's a fighter pilot who came on the Joe Rogan show, and he's an older fighter pilot, so he did it like, you know, maybe 10 years ago or whatever. And he's presented video of a UFO where he said, and it's corroborated by his other fighter pilot friends, where he's like, here's, look at my radar, okay? We're along the coast of wherever it was.
Been released, yeah.
Yep. Take a look at this thing. This is the reading on the radar. We're like, hey, there's something right here. It's a blip on the radar. It's stationary, but it's in the middle of the air. We're all going to fly towards it now. All of them flew towards it, right? And they're going, okay, we're approaching. And then they went, here he comes. They're trying to hail it. Nothing's happening. It notices they're there, and then it disappears. Now, what he said was, it zoomed away at something ridiculous like 0 to, you know, some ridiculous Mach 3 in less than half a second, right? Like that, right? They bathe the area with thermographs, and there's no evidence of any propulsion. One, there's nothing that can propel you that fast or any craft that fast.
Yep.
This thing just disappeared. And they said, this many people, or it's actually public record now, these guys know that this happened, and no one can explain it.
Still think you're cheating by saying aliens in general, but I like the...
Let's call it this particular alien event, though, and the fact that it's backed up by a US, you know, sort of by a Canadian congressman.
Well, it's only Canadian. But I mean, sorry,
nothing,
Dan.
He's got nothing to gain by rubbishing his own name in the US Congress, do you know what I mean? I think it gives it some...
I disagree. I think you get notoriety, I think you get, like, your name known, and some people, that might be enough. But anyway, look, point is, I don't believe for a second aliens live among us just passively observing. If I'm going to buy anything, I buy into the fact that their tech allows us to observe us from a long way away, and occasionally they float down close enough to get whatever reading / whatever that they need from us.
I'm actually probably on board with that, because like, to actually infiltrate the society and live among us,
this is
like
not a, fucking they live.
Seems
sorry.
Like a waste. Seems like no. A waste of time.
The Queen is not an lizard.
No, that's
alien.
All shit. That's all shit.
Yeah, that's my point. Like. What? But if you've got the tech where you can make yourself look whatever you want to look like, then you've also probably got the tech to do a lot more damage than just observe. Oh, they're nice. No, if we are disrupting the fabric of the universe / our galaxy, you're going to quash that real fast.
So do you, for the record, do you believe that UFOs are real?
I'm much more likely to believe that there are.
No,
other.
No. Do you believe?
No. Do I believe that they're real and they're visiting us? No,
statistically, you would have to go with the fact that there's life other than
us,
right?
Life on other worlds and in other galaxies, and yes, absolutely.
Okay,
we cannot be.
So there are.
We cannot be the only.
We're not it.
Species advanced to this point in the entire universe. Not statistically speaking. That
so you
chance,
do believe in aliens?
Yeah. Do I believe they visit us regularly? No.
Really?
No.
Hmm.
And not make themselves known, or not take us over, or not squish us into oblivion. No.
Well, like I said, what was that thing these fighter pilots saw? You know, like it's something. So I think they've turned up, but I don't think they're hanging.
Don't know. Yeah, look, yeah. I'm more likely to believe they visit than that they have made a home among us, a la Alan Tudyk in that TV show.
Brilliant.
All right, good. My number four is the Pollock sisters, and this is a story which basically comes around to perhaps suggest in reincarnation, which I find fucking fascinating.
Do you?
So the Pollock sisters in the 1940s, they were Florence gave birth to a baby girl named Jacqueline, and then they had another one as well, Joanna. Jacqueline and Joanna. Jacqueline and Joanna. Joanna would say, I'm never going to grow up to become a lady. She was, as a kid, say, I'll never be a lady, that kind of shit.
When were they alive again?
In the 1940s.
Okay.
And on May 7th, 1957, 6-year-old Jacqueline and 11-year-old Joanna were walking to church with a young neighborhood boy, as they often did. Car came up behind them, mounted the curb, and hit them going at high speed, killing all three instantly.
Sure.
Oh, actually, the boy died a little bit later with injuries at hospital. The woman was driving the car, get this is awful, had just lost her children in a custody battle, was feeling angry and upset, and was actually trying to take her own life. I know, I'll try and take my own life by hitting three kids walking along the side of the road.
Did she aim for the kids?
Apparently.
How would she take her own life by doing that?
This is just...
Bitches. Anyway, go on. Sorry. Go on.
So, obviously, the family's devastated. Florence, the mother, John, the father. John had a lot of belief in the afterlife and everything else, but they managed to survive. Their relationship survives, and they go on to have further children. Jillian and Jennifer were born October 4th, 1958, so we're talking not even 18 months after the loss of their previous children. Twins never ran the family, but they had these two newborn twins with the exact same birthmarks that Joanna and Jacqueline had. And it was this that Florence first started thinking, Jesus, this is a bit strange. When the twins were old enough to talk, they began identifying and requesting toys that had belonged to their sisters. And they would point out landmarks that no one of their age would know.
So those murdered or killed kids,
yep,
we think are reincarnated as these other kids.
This is purporting. I'm not saying I believe it. I'm saying it's fascinating. They would panic upon seeing cars idling. That car's coming to get us.
Wow.
They would screech.
That's freaky.
And they knew about street safety without either of their parents teaching them about it. They need to look right and left in the States. This made it all the way to a psychologist named Dr. Ian Stevenson, who was an expert on reincarnation. That was his whole bent. I'm studying this through my entire career. He studied thousands of cases and he wrote a book telling of 14 cases he actually believed to be real of the thousands of purported reincarnation cases. And this was one of them.
So do you believe in reincarnation?
No, but I love the idea of it.
I think you could make a good Buddhist if you weren't such a scientist.
I thought you were going to say cunt.
Oh,
so I'll take
sorry,
it.
Cunt.
Anyway, I find that really fascinating. And what are the explanations? You cannot explain that unless it's a lie from the parents that they've reported and whatever else.
Mm.
If that's the truth in terms of what happened, how do you explain that?
Yeah, no, it's a weird one. The only thing about it is because it's in the 1940s, like who knows what the record is, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, yeah, so that's the only thing
fair
about
enough.
It.
Fair enough. No, no denying that shit.
Okay, my number three is the mystery of dark matter, Paul.
You've gone big.
I know.
You just said aliens in one whole thing.
No, this one goes big.
And now you're going, dark matter.
Do you know what it is?
No.
Okay, so I didn't either. Everyone.
Unless it's from a comic book movie, in which case, go on.
Nope. This is matter as we know it, ladies and gentlemen. Atoms, stars, planets, trees, your mom. They all account for less than 5% of the known universe. Okay. The rest apparently...
I can make a joke, but it'll be at my mum's expense. I'm
yeah,
not doing
I know,
it.
You don't want to do that, yeah. The rest of it, apparently, like fucking 95% of what the universe is made of, it's a mystery. It's a dark mystery. Astronomers and cosmologists... think about 25% of our universe is made up of something called dark matter, and the remainder, around 70%, is what's known as dark energy. And dark matter doesn't interact with light, so we can't see it. And the only reason we know it's out there is because it interacts with gravity. So it's actually this odd thing that we don't know about. And essentially, the gravity exerted by the visible mass of galaxies and clusters and all that sort of stuff is insufficient to hold it together. There's got to be some additional mass in there to create the gravity that's needed. So without dark matter, stars would likely be scattered all over the universe, galaxies and so on, and us, we wouldn't exist. So it's actually well known and scientifically documented that there is this thing that we are made of that we don't fucking know what it is.
So we don't know what it is. That's the unexplained mystery, what it is, but scientists accept that it exists?
Yes. I don't know if it's called the God particle. It's not quite the same thing, but they actually, the dark matter, no one knows much about the particle, but except they're pretty sure it's something we've never encountered here on Earth. They're talking about this.
So don't we get held into our place by the same dark matter?
Yeah, I'm a little sketchy on that one.
Right.
It does say it doesn't interact with light, hence the name dark matter, which means that it's neutral with no electrical charge. And
it only comes out at
night.
Moving.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Mostly.
Sorry.
Mostly. But the, it's just, even though we don't know what it is and we can't see it, apparently it's well known that dark matter is there and that dark matter matters because it actually is real. So I find it somewhat weird that... I guess there's lots of minerals and shit out there we don't know, but this seems like a big proportion of it. So it's always freaked me out a little bit.
Okay, there you go. I wish I could be upbeat about my number three.
It's okay. It's this kind of show.
It is a little bit that kind of show. So Canadian tourist Eliza Lamb disappeared from a hotel called the Cecil Hotel in downtown Los Angeles in 2013, January 26th. People who were staying at the hotel found that the hotel water pressure was weird. They said a couple of people reported that the water tasted funny coming out of, and it was black and had a weird taste coming out of the faucets on the tap.
Yes.
She was found floating naked in a water tank on the roof of the Cecil Hotel 18 days after she disappeared on February 19th. Now, she was staying in a hostel-style room with other travelers, but moved to her own private room because there were complaints about her behavior. She was behaving weirdly. She was acting strangely, like she was almost in hiding, cowering away. But she also moved her hands in strange ways, according to, like, she's on the elevator.
Mm.
As she's talking to someone else, there was no one else in the elevator. Okay, so she's got mental health problems.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Obvious conclusion. Okay, fair enough. Maybe she's on a hallucinogenic drug. And even though she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, the toxicology reports after she was found none of them in her system. She was completely clean at the time of her death.
Mm-hmm.
How did she wind up in this big, huge water tank? There's no way she could have got up to the roof or climbed the water tank or shut the 20-pound lid by herself. So we've got this footage of her talking to someone who's not in the elevator, and then one day later, she's dead and naked in this water tank.
Are we thinking a ghost pulled her out?
No, I wasn't.
Lifted
a ghost.
The fucking tank, floated up there, threw her in, and then went for a fucking cheeseburger. I mean, that's kind of weird.
It's just a fascinatingly weird experiment.
The weird thing being that she can't get there herself.
She can't get in there. She cannot close that thing from inside by herself. Somebody put her in there. Somebody knew she was dead. And whether they murdered her or not, there's no footage. There's no way of knowing. Here we are 10 years later, and there's no explanation for this poor woman's death.
It seems to me like, look, we don't know about the talking with someone thing. We don't know what that's about, okay? But then... Yeah, someone killed her, man. Someone killed her.
Has to
brought
be.
It up there. Yeah, but it's...
But it's never been solved, which is really disturbing, that you can walk into a hotel one day and then be gone the next, and then 18 days later be found floating in their water body tank for, supplying the...
I also feel quite bad for the people who drank that water. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. My number two is about... Did you know, Paul, that the Amazon rainforest itself is a colossal mystery? Now, get this, everyone.
I did not.
Yeah. The Amazon rainforest, 7 million square kilometers. That's how big it is. It's fucking huge.
Getting smaller every day.
It is getting smaller every day. But apparently 5.5 million square kilometers is still unexplored, which is the same size as India.
Wow. Okay?
That's how big it is. That's how unexplored and unknown it is. The assumption is that humans never entered the Amazon until about 1,000 years ago because the soil can't be used and it's inhospitable.
Yeah, exactly. Shit kills you in there.
Exactly. But get this. A Spanish explorer, Francisco Orellana, went there in 1541, and he reported that he saw incredible big cities.
Of gold. Cities of gold.
I don't believe it was gold.
Children
but,
of the...
Okay. So, evidence that large cities flourished in the Amazon with millions of people, and years later, only now are there some signs of evidence that he was telling the truth, because people were saying you're full of shit. The Spaniards apparently... What happened apparently is the Spaniards brought smallpox into the Amazon. It killed everyone, decimated them.
No good. You can never trust a Spaniard.
You can't. That's you can never trust a Spaniard. Exactly.
Yeah.
Within 50 years, that all of their cities got completely overgrown. But now that the jungle's being cleared, they're starting to see these ancient cities. And apparently, these people back in the day invented something called terra preta. It's a type of soil also known as Amazonian black earth, 1,000 years, and it's full of microbes. And you can use a handful of it, add it to barren soil, and make the entire soil
Dear
fertile.
God, my lawn needs that.
I know, right? It's the shit. And apparently it's really... The Amazonian tribes had some kind of composting technology which made this. Apparently, the unexplained things about it, there's evidence that the Amazon is actually a man-made rainforest, not a natural occurrence.
Oh, here we go.
Because it has certain trees like Brazil nut trees or ice cream bean trees that are dominant. They're the dominant tree regime in the Amazon. In other words, people who live in there actually chose those trees to cultivate, so it's not a natural rainforest. It has huge geometrical structures in there that no one can understand until it gets cleared and looked at.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I'm saying the whole thing apparently has got a million mysteries, and most of it is unexplored. There's still tribes, they say, that live there now. And it probably would be in 5.5 million square kilometers.
But no, what? Like they're the village from fucking M. Night Shyamalan.
A little bit. I think a little bit that there's actually that going on. But it's weird to me that on this planet, or at this time in history, there's still such an unexplored massive place there.
I'm stunned you haven't come up with Bigfoot, Yeti, Abominable Snowman, fucking...
I don't know enough about the Bigfoot.
All the rest of that stuff. But maybe that's a subject of a future countdown. All right, that's your number three.
Two.
My number two is where I had the Watcher, so...
Wow, high up.
Straight back to you. Run us through your 10 through 2, Wayne, and then reveal your number 1, sir.
No problem. Number 10, who's Banksy? Number 9, the Watcher House. Number 8 is the Philadelphia Experiment. 7 was D.B. Cooper. 6, Natalie Wood's Mysterious Drowning. 5, Atlantis. 4, the world's highest ranking alien believer. Basically, is aliens around and here's how some shit happened. 3, the Mystery of Dark Matter. 2, the Amazon Rainforest. And 9, number 1... This has always vexed me, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
It's the goddamn pyramids. Okay? And it's not so much what's in there, who took a shit, whatever. It's how were they built. We are still figuring out how they built. Now,
yep,
the Egyptian pyramids, right? And this is what's cool. Some of the blocks are 2.5 ton blocks. And they've done a lot of research recently to say, how did they move these blocks from literally through mountains from very far away? Now, you can, with apparently four men and the right plane and sand and water, you can shift a 2.5 mil block. They noticed, they've proven how you can do it up a hill. But there are 15 ton blocks of thing of sand there, of like whatever, lime shit, which didn't come from that region, which they have no idea how they transported it. And the idea here is that people think that there are actual, there are accounts of priests chanting while blocks, big blocks, get risen into the air. The idea being that they had access to some lost technology that we no longer know about, which is either antimatter or something that actually pushes things up in the air. Or the idea is, the prevailing theory is that the Amazonians or the Incas or whoever, they actually, not Amazonians, the fucking ancient, these people, had somehow devised a way of using sound to affect matter to allow it to be lifted and transported places. And that's the weirdest thing about this. I'm like, how did they even do it all? Some people say that aliens built it, and that's how they lifted all the rocks with their ships and other shit. But for me, like, the actual idea that it's there in the first place, and that we have all these facts about how this couldn't possibly be built today, because I don't know how we would lift 15-ton shit today.
That is the most fascinating thing. Absolutely, 100% for sure.
Right?
Like, what's the technology involved to allow this to happen? And to be so perfect in its construction.
That's right. And I've heard a story that, like, it's long, well, some people believe this, that there's lost knowledge that happened, that was known, you know, way before our times, that due to wars, famines, something, entire civilizations were lost, and that technology was lost with them. Now we're in mechanics. We've got cranes, we've got helicopters, we've got fucking fulcrums, this, that, whatever.
Yep.
But what if they had, like, witchcraft? Or some, well, witchcraft. Whatever, man.
Magic.
Very cool. Literally magic, what we would call magic. So that's my number one mysterious, unsolved mystery.
All right. Very nice. My number 10, Jack the Ripper. 9, the Severed Feet Mystery. 8, the Black Dahlia Murder. 7, the Lost Colony of Roanoke. 6, the Mary Celeste. Number 5, the Hinterkaifeck Murders. 4, the Pollock Sisters and Reincarnation. 3, Elsa Lam's Very Disturbing Death. Number 2, the Watcher. And number 1, the Dyatlov Pass Incident.
I've heard a little bit about this. Tell us about the whatever pass incident.
On the night of February 1st, 1959, 9 hikers mysteriously died in the mountains of what is now Russia, or what is known as the Dyatlov Pass. And on February 26th, they found them all. So there's a whole bunch of weird shit around this mystery. There were footprints left by the group, some wearing socks, some wearing a single shoe, some barefoot, all of which followed to the edge of a forest that was nearby. 2 bodies were found there, shoeless and wearing only underwear. So what was making all these footprints? Initially, it was thought they died by hypothermia, but medical examiners said that, look at the body as well as 7 others that they discovered over the months that followed, that disproved this theory. 1 body had evidence of blunt force trauma, so they were assaulted.
Mm.
1 had third-degree burns, 1 had been vomiting blood, and the last was missing a tongue.
Ugh.
Some of their clothing was found to be radioactive. So there's theories that say, yeah, seriously, the KGB interfered, the drug overdose, the UFOs, gravity anomalies, the Yeti did this.
It sounds like that shitty show you made me watch with them bitches in the forest. Like, what was that called?
Yellow Jackets?
Yeah.
Just started season 2, how fucking dare you, sir? And then there's a real phenomenon called infrasound, in which the wind interacts with the topography to create a barely audible hum that can induce powerful feelings of nausea, panic, dread, chills, nervousness, raised heart rate, and breathing difficulties.
Oh, so the idea
is drive people insane.
So they all went nuts because of the wind sound shit thing, yeah. And then someone took a shit in the woods, someone busted someone's head open, someone bit out their own tongue, someone hurled.
This was the basis of a really shitty horror film by Rennie Harlan called Devil's Pass, in which 5 students go back to work out what happened. And it posits, and this is Harlan himself has said, after studying this all extensively, because he's now the world-leading fucking foremost expert on it.
Rennie.
The hitchhiker's deaths were probably due to government experiments.
Russian government experiments?
Yep.
Really?
Are you really going to put it past the Russian government?
Nope. You know what? I would not put past... If they did do this, I'd fucking clean up the mess.
That's a good point.
Why let anyone see it?
Yeah, well, they just disappear forever and never be seen again.
Uh-huh.
That's a very good point.
Uh-huh.
So there you are. My number one,
the
Dyatlov Pass.
Dyatlov Pass, nice one, brother.
No honorable mentions today. We're already running.
We're already long, aren't we? I'm so sorry if this wasn't the normal frivolity of the show, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, but that happens when you.
We'll be back to that next week, I am sure. All right, then. Without any further ado, let's get into it. Then your feedback on the topic at hand, segment of the week, all the Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Jonathan Kidd, and he said number 3, Stonehenge.
Yeah.
Number 2, Edgar Allan Poe's death. Number 1, did Wayne's nude scene in Reap get cut? Boy, we have some fun listeners this week, and obviously talking to the fact that we don't often talk about this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of taking the piss.
Good.
In the
good.
Feedback.
We need some.
Alan here. Smith said DB Cooper at number 3.
Yep.
Area 51 at number 2, and the Dyatlov Pass incident at number 1. Honorable mention, how is Wayne's laugh annoying and endearing at the same time?
It's one of life's mysteries.
We got a review a couple of weeks back, I think it was, from somewhere around the world.
What do you think?
I tried the show, good content, can't deal with the laugh.
Yeah.
3 stars.
I've had that review of me, my personality.
Chris Yeeney, patron of the show, said number 3, Mothman. Number 2, Northwestern US cattle mutilations.
Ew.
Alien inspired there. Number 1, Reap's existence. Mina Harker said, Dan, patron of the show, said, why hasn't anyone seen Reap? Number 3. Number 2, is it because our fragile minds can't handle the awesome? Number 1, what really happens to Pat, rest in peace, Binge Movies? So reference to Jason from Binge Movies and his co-host who disappeared off the scene, apparently died in a tragic accident.
Really?
No.
Okay.
But
because otherwise
we don't know. Yeah, never been revealed. Stephen Burns, this is the absolute quintessential question, which is the greatest mystery in the history of podcasting. I won't say the world. That would be too grandiose and too extreme.
Go on.
But in the history of podcasting, Stephen Burns said, how does Wayne get away with half the stuff he says? Perfect, Stephen. Perfect. Catherine Guard said, another good page of the show. Thank you so much for your support. The truth about the Bermuda Triangle, number 3. What happened to the princes in the tower? I don't know what she's referring to. And number 1, who was Jack the Ripper?
Mm.
Thank you for that, Catherine.
Yeah, tell us about the princes in the tower. I'm not familiar.
Timothy Williams said number 3. Actually, I'll read this back in order. Number 1, what did Essendon actually take during the drug saga? Number 2, how has Essendon not won a final for 6,744 days and counting? At the time of recording, Timothy, we are down about 30 points against St Kilda in round 3 of 2023. That's how. And number 3, how is my man Wayne still single? The guy's a catch.
How very kind of you, my friend.
Matt Evans said the disappearance of the SS Kumbana in 1912, Australia's Titanic-like event.
Really? Oh, no, I've heard of this one.
Dead to be found after sailing out into the eye of cyclone. I've been fishing the remote waters for the last 20 years. One day, she might appear on my sounder.
What the hell? That's kind of cool. Some fucking deadliest catch shit right there.
Gary Stevenson said, number 1. Who shot JFK? Number 2, the Loch Ness Monster. Number 1, why won't Seagal take on Wayne?
Oh, we all know that one.
We do. I think we do. Cade Meyer, who has his show.
Special Cade.
Believe. We almost could get him on the show. Unfortunately, it was a little bit late notice. He gave a whole bunch here. He said the Flying Dutch from the Philadelphia Experiment, Men in Black, Skinwalkers, the Rendlesham Forest Incident, Mothman, Valentik UFO Mystery, the Roswell Incident, Bob Lazar in Area 51/S4, and number 1, the Patterson Gimlin film, which is, of course, the film purporting to show Bigfoot in all its glory.
Bigfoot, eh?
There you go. That Bigfoot. He's number 1. And then lastly, to wrap it up, Jonas Land, I mentioned him earlier at the top of the show. Number 3, the Voynich manuscript. And is it the key? Oh, sorry. And is the key to it really in the script of Reap? Number 2, what really happened with D.B. Cooper? And was he just transporting the script of Reap? And number 1, what really happened in Indiana Jones 4? And is it truly Reap by another name? There's our funny listeners getting involved in the show. And you can do the same. Let us know your feedback on any topic at hand. The Facebook community link in the show notes. That's where we look for it. Or you can hit us up on Twitter at The Countdown PC. Check out the Facebook. Sorry, I said that already. The website, countdownpodcast.com, for all other links, Patreon, all the rest of it there as well. And we host on Podbean. Follow us there. Wayne, what's happening next week for episode 419 of The Countdown?
I don't suppose you can remember.
Nope.
Okay, give us a second, ladies and gentlemen. It's the good old top 10, last 10, ladies and gentlemen.
It is time to return to
back
the world.
Back to the movies.
Which means Wayne has 8 films to watch this week.
You are surprisingly accurate. I guess I know what I'll be doing this evening and probably most of tomorrow.
Joe, that's always a podcast, tries to watch 6 films on the weekend so he can hit his target for the number of films he wants to watch first time for the year.
Oh, that's
apparently
so...
you and he should go head-to-head this weekend.
I got a few picked out, I got to say.
All right, excellent. That's it from us today. Thank you so much for joining us. We really greatly appreciate it. Hope you've got some unexplained mysteries to keep you up thinking late at night.
And I hope you explain some of your own mysteries.
Brilliant. You know my name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Sure, just use the same one.
We'll catch you next time. See ya.